Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Shall I say them now?
Yes.
Okay. These are just a few typos. On new member welcome and introductions, it has Echo Fields, and Echo is not capitalized. It should be because it's a name. On the grant meeting schedule, there is a typo on the last line. It says possible separate meeting. I think it's supposed to be separate meeting. And on the Medford implementation plan review and discussion, the last sentence on that is would like to move forward in drafting City of Ashland homeless implication plan. And I think that's maybe implementation plan. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the wording should be. And then on announcements, it has CCO group doing housing and community health and improvement plan. And I wouldn't know what that meant if I were reading that a month from now. So I wonder if that could be altered in some way to make it clearer what it's trying to say.
Yes, I can make those corrections when I'm in the office tomorrow.
Okay, great. Thanks. I second the motion to approve as amended.
Great.
All right, so the next item on the agenda is the public forum. So this would be for issues that aren't on the agenda, so unrelated to the CDBG application presentations and unrelated to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And so if there's a public forum comments provided then, Linda, were you?
Oh, so we didn't vote on that, on the minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. So a vote on the minutes then to approve. They've been motioned and seconded. All in favor, raise your hand if you're visual or say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So motion carries. Next, thank you, Linda. Next item, public forum. So is there anybody that was coming to speak on an item that's not on the agenda? Then I think we can move forward. So the next item is the utility bill committee report.
So I know that Rich was a part of this committee. Is there anyone else here who was on that committee who wants to talk about these recommendations briefly?
I was a part of that committee, but I missed a couple of meetings because I was out of town. So I can certainly speak to it a little bit, but I'm not the one who did any of those final recommendations. So I don't know if you guys want to maybe ask questions or chat about that with me or wait for Rich. It's up to you guys.
I have some familiarity with the changes because I talked to Ken Gudger about them. I can talk a little bit about it if anyone wants to hear about that. The main changes that I think are great that the committee came up with is changing the presentation of the resources on the door knocker hanger, the doorknob hanger, so that you have, for instance, Aura is one of the listings. St. Vincent de Paul is one of the listings, so that people know immediately who they can call at a resource center type of approach, so that they can then walk them through the steps to get help with their utilities. Another one is making sure that people know about the Roundup program, where they can round up their utility payments. And they want to do a feature where some people could put even more money than just rounding up.
I wasn't clear whether we're continuing to use the door hangers, or I thought the phone calls weren't very effective, but are we continuing that practice?
I know that when we met with the city administrator, we talked about that, and there was a question as to whether or not moving from the door hangers to the phone calls was an issue. One of the challenges that they mentioned is that there isn't really, they don't have the bandwidth in the city to really do both of those door hangers. And so they do need to stick with the phone calls. And I think that one of the things that they were, I think that's one of the reasons why they were talking about changing the order of services on that door hanger, on that one door hanger, so that when people receive it, that they are able to seek services right away instead of waiting.
So are we doing first the door hanger and then a phone call, or only a phone call, or only a door hanger? I was confused.
I think, is it the first one is a phone call, I think?
Yeah, they're going to do an analysis. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
They're going to do an analysis on the phone calls and the effect it had. And so they're still going to do both, I believe. But I think having the people that are easy to call is going to be the most important on the door hanger.
Does anyone know if there's a moratorium on shutoffs during the COVID-19 outbreak?
I think that they're not shutting off, right?
That's my understanding, is they're not going to be doing a shut off for a certain amount of time, but I think that's to be determined, as well as recommendation on non-evictions.
Yeah, I think we might, sorry. Well, I think that one thing, go ahead.
The city is indeed allowing a greater grace period for during the COVID-19 crisis, that they won't be doing shutoffs, and also waiving any late fees that are incurred during this period of time.
I think one of the thoughts that I had on that is just that, you know, if people are out of work and we have, say, a grace period that ends around the time that businesses start to open, they're not necessarily going to have all that money. So that's just one thing for us to consider too, whether or not there's going to be additional needs coming through some of those organizations as well.
Just want to say thank you for being part of that committee. I think it's really important work, and I appreciate it.
It looks like both Rich Rohde have rejoined us and Gina Duquesne have rejoined. And I'm also seeing somebody that joined recently by phone. If they could identify themselves, then we can name them accordingly.
That is Rich.
Okay.
So I'm joining by phone, but I can see it, but I won't be on.
All right.
Otherwise.
All right. Thank you. And Gina, can you hear us as well?
Yes, I hear everyone really well. And what happened is I was on the phone driving, and then I got home and I accidentally shut us off, so I called back. So that might be that other
person. Well, you're back on now, so thank you.
Yeah.
To catch Rich up, we actually just did the utility bill committee report, but as you were on that committee, if you had anything further to elaborate before you move forward with the agenda, now would be the time.
Well, I would just say that the group of people that were on that with Kelly and myself and John and Ken and Aaron did a great job. And I'm hoping, did we approve the recommendations?
No, but we should.
No. So my thought was that we could approve the recommendations with a additional recommendation that we send those to the council and to the city with the notion that they can be implemented with the notion that when we've gotten through much of the crisis that we're in right now. So it's hard to put this on a first part of priorities, but we still ought to approve them, is my recommendation.
I can move to approve the recommendations made by the utility subcommittee. Is that enough to do what you're saying, Rich?
I think it would. Can we just say that those recommendations come with fitting into the city's priorities versus in this current crisis mode. Does that make sense?
Yes. So I move to add the addition of the city understanding to put this in their own priority given the pandemic going on.
Correct. So is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there a discussion more? It sounds like you've already discussed them. Can we, all those in favor, wave their hands or say aye?
Aye.
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 Is there any opposed? And any abstentions? Then we've made that set of recommendations. And so is it all right for me to continue with the agenda, Brandon? Hello?
Yes, thank you.
Should I just go ahead and start? We're going to be looking at the grant applications, and are all the people online?
I believe so.
And is Pamela Joy first? Is she there?
Well, I think that this section on the agenda was to talk about the application review, not the applicant presentations.
Okay.
And
okay.
She'll be joining us at 4:25 is my understanding.
Okay. Well, in terms of looking at these, does Linda, do you want to just start us out with that discussion of where we are?
Sure. So this item on the agenda is here for, I mean, I think originally it was the commissioners asked for this time to talk amongst yourselves about potential questions that you had regarding the applications. In light of all the new things that have come along, this might also be a good time to talk about Kelly's memo that she provided. So I don't know. It's whatever your pleasure would be or whatever you want to discuss first. I would leave that up to you. Any thoughts?
Well, anybody can respond to this. My thought is that we do listen to the candidates, that we ask the questions that we have now amongst ourselves, and then we discuss Kelly's memo before we go into, after the applicant's presentation, but before we go into our review and recommendations.
Rich,
I see Jackie shaking her head.
Yeah,
Linda,
I agree.
What do you think?
That sounds good to me. This might also be a good time for us to go around and talk about our conflicts or just get that ethical piece out of the way.
Great. That's a great point. And then we'll see what questions we have, and then we will dive into the presentations. So, Chris, are you familiar with, is everybody familiar with the conflict of interest rules that we go by? We've had many presentations on this, but Chris, you may not have.
Yes, I'm aware of the conflict of interest, and I can happily can happily say that I have no conflict here.
Okay, are there people of the commission that would like to make a statement reference to conflict of interest now?
Yes, I
Jackie?
Would like to. Uh-huh. Yes, I would like to say that I will have no conflict of interest in our discussion today. I am a volunteer, and I'm on the Aura board, and I know there will be discussion tonight about Aura. However, I have no potential financial gain from any association with Aura, and I believe I can act in the best interests of Ashland, and I will be fair in my decision-making on the issues we will be dealing with.
Thank you. So are there others that had a question or a conflict that they wanted to bring up?
Yes, I'd like to say something. In the past, I've abstained from voting on issues relating to Aura because I was involved in transferring the winter shelter over to the control and the of Aura. And I'm no longer in that role. I'm now just a volunteer, and I believe I can vote once more because I don't really have a financial interest at all in Aura.
So this is Linda. I would just like to say that I do have a financial interest at this moment. I'm contracting with Aura to provide the hotel space for the shelter residents that are most fragile. So I will abstain.
Okay, thank you for making that. And then, so we won't necessarily hear from you until after we've made a decision about our applicant's proposals, okay?
Correct.
So I'm also a volunteer with the shower trailer, but I don't think that's much of a conflict of interest, but I have had that relation to the ORA shower trailer too. Anyone else want to make that?
Not here.
I know. Oh, Heidi, yeah. I mean, excuse me. Who was that?
Echo.
That was Echo.
Echo. Okay.
Yep, I'm all good.
You're good. Okay. So I know we've read these grants pretty thoroughly. Is there a question now that we want to, we're opening up if people do have questions about any one of the grants that we can discuss rather than a question to the applicant?
So the one sort of overriding question for me as I was going through these, that in light of the twilight zone that we live in now, a lot of the timelines in all of the proposals are probably not going to be achievable for a variety of reasons. So how much, being new, how much flexibility will these applicants have if they're not quite on target with their original timeline?
So I can answer that.
Great. Yeah, go ahead.
With regard to CDBG, we can make adjustments to the timeline, and we do have an end date for those grants, but there is an extension clause if that's necessary. So we would work with the applicants on that and obviously understand that things are different now than they are normally. But with regard to the Affordable Housing Trust funds, we actually don't have any hard and fast rules around timelines. But I expect that we would treat it in the same way. If there is, you know, we would include a scope of work with the grant agreement, and that scope of work would hopefully lay out a timeline for completion. So if the applicant varied from that timeline, we would just request that they submit information about that so that we could adjust accordingly.
Yeah, that was my main sort of overriding issue. Thank you, Linda.
Other questions?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I had a question about if we only partially fund Food Angels, since theirs is a building project, whether or not it could really be completed. And so it's, I think their original request was for 10,000 and the staff recommended 5,000. I was thinking that maybe we should make it 10,000 and I don't know where to take the additional money from, but I think it would be a real hardship for them to complete that project with only part of the money.
So I can clarify that as well. And I'm sorry that I didn't make it more clear in the staff evaluation. there were some of the items were not recommended to be funded because they weren't eligible for CDBG funding. And I do have a list of those items, one of which may or may not be, it would require a clarification, but there are some things that can't be funded with CDBG. So that's why staff recommended funding less.
Okay. Can you tell me what the items were that the staff recommended not funding?
Yes. Let me look at the... I actually wrote down the ones that we could fund. So there were essentially three things. One was a shelving system, and CDBG can't pay for things that aren't attached, essentially part of the building. So a shelving system that is separate, we wouldn't be able to pay for that. Then there was some compost bins, and I don't think those would be eligible as part of the rehabilitation of the building project. And then there was a storage shed, and this came up with another grantee in the past. In only spaces that are contained in the original space would be allowed. So if it was a separate structure outside of the space that's being rehabilitated, then that would not be allowed.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
I just wanted to respond to Heidi with that. I think in past times that we have asked the grant application, the people who are presenting, if we don't give you the full amount, can you still do this project? So we can just ask her that. Maybe she does have an idea for how she can, you know, continue to do things if she's only given $5,000, and that would be a good question to ask.
And I do believe that Pamela Joy has joined us by phone. Are you there, Pamela?
Yes.
Okay, that was just to affirm that it was you that had joined. I think that we're likely to move into CDBG applicant presentations, at which point we'll be hearing from you again.
Okay.
So, Pamela, this is Rich. I'm going to ask if there are other questions. We were definitely segueing into your project. And so if I'm asking the rest of the commission, are there other questions that we need before we hear from our three applicants?
Did you want to discuss the Kelly's memo before we the applicants?
No, we were gonna do that after we hear from those, before we go into the review and the recommendation.
Okay.
So it's just among the commissioners that we would have that discussion about the memo?
Well, it's an open meeting, so we're not kicking people out, but it would be a discussion that we would have about that memo, and then we would go into the review of each one of the grants.
Okay, I've got that.
And the staff recommendation.
Okay, got it.
Linda, there are actually two different memos. Is that correct, Linda? There's one about Aura and then a Meals on Wheels. There's actually two memos, right?
Yes, there were two additions to this agenda that are not on the online agenda. One was the memo that Kelly sent out this morning regarding the use of affordable housing trust funds. The other memo was the one that you received essentially right before the meeting, which is an additional request for CDBG capital funds.
Thanks for clarifying.
Okay.
I have a quick question. This is Gina. Linda, did you send that to Gmail or to NH Gmail, Newman Hotel Group?
I changed your email in the distribution list to your Gmail account. So it should have gone there, but I can certainly talk about it at whatever point works best for you.
Okay. I did get the one just before the meeting, but I don't think I see Kelly's email.
I don't.
Okay.
Are you at a...
email
we,
it to
we,
you.
Can you resend
Shelley's
that to
email
her?
Yes. From Linda.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Okay, Pamela, are you there?
Yes.
So what we're asking is if you can give us in about 5 minutes your presentation about the your project request, and then you might address what you heard a little bit from council commissioners about partial funding.
Okay, so I imagine that you all are familiar with the Food Angels, particularly as I came before you last year, and we did get a grant, and it greatly improved the space that the Food Angels work in by replacing insulation and the door so that it's now warmer, and new lighting so that it's better lighting. And we're very grateful for that. The roof needs to be replaced, and I believe the estimate for that was $5,700. And then my idea is to go forward with Food Angels for the next 10, 15 years or longer as I can. The space that we use is very small, and we use that for sorting the food, and we have to move several things out into the driveway part of the time that we're working, which is why the storage shed was added on as being needed to be replaced, because that's used almost daily as a holding space. Part of the roof now leaks, and the other part is not leaking, but it's old, so it needs to be replaced. I'm not sure what else to say at this point. I'm happy to answer questions. If anybody is not familiar with what we do and how we work, I'm happy to talk about that.
Well, I thought your application was very thorough and very needed at this point, but I think maybe we should try to hone in on the question from the staff recommendations about what is eligible and not eligible. And Linda, mm-hmm. would you be able to just clarify again with Pamela and us what we could fund and what we are not recommended to fund or can't fund?
Yes. So all of the roof replacement, the windows, there's some corrugated poly roofing, the stairs to the food storage facility, all of those things would be eligible uses. The things that were probably not eligible would be the shelving unit, the composting bins, and the storage shed, which was unclear to me, Pamela, if that was within the existing footprint of the building.
I didn't hear the last few words that you said. It was unclear what, Linda?
Oh, whether the storage shed that's being proposed is in the footprint of the building, in the existing building, or if this is a separate structure from the building.
It is separate. It's just we use it daily, but it is not part of the garage that we use as our main sorting area.
And I don't think that we would be able to fund that piece because it's not part of the main building that all the other improvements are being done on. So that was a clarification for me. Thank you.
Okay. So what I heard was that the funding that was suggested was $5,000, but that doesn't even cover the roofing job, which is being done by a roofing company, and then other things are being done by a contractor, a builder guy that's different from the roofing company, but $5,000 wouldn't cover the cost of the roofing.
So I was looking at the roofing bid, which was $3,725, and then the windows.
Oh, okay. So I have it wrong in my head. I don't have all those papers ahead in front of me. So what was the estimate from the Apex Roofing Company for their re-roofing?
It was $3,725, and then I have.
Oh, okay.
There is some additional roof stuff, though. The corrugated roofing is, I think,
right.
$550. Different section of roofing.
Yes, that's part of the same building, but it's over our washing up area, and it's a clear roof rather than what do they call that stuff, that shingles stuff? I don't know.
Shingle.
The shingle roofing. The shingle roofing is being done by the roofing company, and right. I had in my mind that it was $5,000, and I'm glad to hear that it was $3,700 and not $5,000.
Yeah.
That's great relieving to me. So then the other roofing would be done by a different person.
Yeah, and so that's in the separate bid with the other work from the contractor.
Right. Okay. So that's relieving to me. And so did you have another question or something else you wanted me to clarify?
Go
ahead, Heidi.
I just wanted to say, Pamela, that I really appreciate all that Food Angels is doing, especially right now. It's really important because so many people are going to be in need of food. So your services are even more important now.
Right.
Anyway.
Heidi, we have been shifting almost daily what we do, it's the same, but how we focus where the food is going, depending on what we're told by Peace House and the food bank, because right now our main directives are to both the free meals, which have expanded, and the food bank, which is giving away a lot of boxes at the door. So that's what we've been focusing on, and I continue to call in daily and go, okay, what's needed today, and to adjust. So it's been a little more intense with just trying to keep up with the changes.
Right.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm trying to, we on a timeline, so I'm trying to see where we are with questions and presentation so we can move to the next person. But who is wanting to speak?
It's me, Gina. I had a quick question for Pam. Because when this was written, and like everything is happening hour to hour, day to day, has the number of people, the amount gone up in these last, since we're in this coronavirus situation? Has the demand been more?
Yes, from the free meals. Demand for food, you mean, you're asking?
Yeah.
For the free meals, yes. The food bank, we try to send as much to all the time anyway, but the free meals, they've quadrupled. So Peace House is now doing 4 meals. That's much more for us to send their way.
Yeah, and Head Start, that's good. Thank you.
I have a clarification question. It's Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Pamela. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's a wonderful needed service in our community. I greatly appreciate it. I just want to make sure I understand if we go with the $5,000 that Linda, you're saying, looks like it's approved. It would fit under the CDBG funding. So it would be the roof to the garage and also would include the replacement of the two small side windows and then would also include upgrade right. of the sink washing area, right?
Right.
Okay.
So, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm taking Linda's word that that amount would cover those needed things.
Okay, that's great, because I know that's the area that you are working in, the main house area, and that will make a big improvement with the sink, washing area, the windows, and then the roof. So, excellent. Okay, thank you.
Right. The only thing that I didn't include, and I because I don't know enough about building, is that now with this coronavirus, it would be great if we had hot water in our washing area, and we don't. We just have cold water. And I don't know enough about.
Well, you could probably, Pam, you can probably get an estimate for that, and we can make an adjustment.
Okay. I will do that. I will call a plumber and have him estimate that, because with the coronavirus, what's happening is that everybody is now coming in my kitchen and bathroom to wash their hands in hot water. And mm-hmm. I'm fine with that, but it would be great if we had hot water in our washing up area.
Okay, folks, so, I think, you got more questions?
One more question from me. How soon would you need the quote from the plumber for the plumbing the hot water?
We have lots of time.
Okay. Like a month?
Yeah, a month would be good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I will work on getting that together in the next week.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you Wonderful. All so much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, folks. And so if we can just move ahead, I think we can go to Maslow. And I can't see who's there, but can we have Maslow give their presentation?
I don't know if there's anyone here from Maslow today.
Okay. Well, we do have all their materials. So is there folks from ORA that are here online to give their presentation?
Yes. We are here.
Okay. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Oh, well, okay. But we're moving quickly, so we'd be pleased to hear what you'd like to add to the wonderful application that you put in.
Okay, I'm just going to do a quick summary, and then Diane is going to add, our wonderful board president is going to add a little in, but we'll stay within our time frame. So I just want to thank you for your time and the opportunity to apply for these funds. The funds are for essential services, which, as everybody knows, are very much needed even now more than ever before. And St. Vincent de Paul has kind of backed away from being at the forefront of assisting and some of the utility assistance. And so ORA is really working with people in regards to their needs and people being housed, staying in their housing, or have any challenges that they need extra support and assistance in. And so we really appreciate this opportunity. And I'm going to hand it over to Diane a little bit to give you some more details. Thank you.
Hi, folks. Brandon, we had sent a set of slides over to Linda. I don't know whether or not you have those and can load those for us, and if not, we'll be okay.
I do, and I can go to share my screen now, which I think will bring it up, but we'll lose the visuals of all of our smiling faces. So
okay, that's okay. It's okay if you lose my smiling face. There we go. So I'm just going to very quickly speak to these slides. I think all of you know who ORA is at this point. You see there our mission and how nicely it aligns with Ashland's consolidated plan goal. We are all about moving people from crisis to stability. Brandon, if you would switch to the next slide. This is just a reminder that we have three major programs within ORA. People, I think, are very familiar with our winter shelter, which just closed. We did close a bit early because of the coronavirus. Of course, our laundry shower trailer, Rich just mentioned that a moment ago, where he has volunteered. And then our resource center. And I can now switch to the next slide. And just very quickly, the kinds of results that we see with each of these programs, because of course that matters when you think about where to spend precious grant funds. So the winter shelter, we had remarkable success this year in our winter shelter, 266 services provided to the guests that we housed this winter season. 28 people were housed this year, which is phenomenal. It's about twice the rate that we had last year, and we attribute that greatly to the fact that we were in a single site, it was more stable, and that we had a dedicated navigator for our guests. It's just been an amazing result for this winter. 12 people got jobs, so again, another phenomenal success there. Our laundry shower trailer is closed right now because of the pandemic. You can see the results that we had in 2019 there about the number of showers and loads of laundry, a very much needed resource, and I'll speak briefly to that later about it would be great to get it reopened. And then finally, our resource center, which is open year-round, and you can see how busy we were in 2019 with 2,381 services provided. And the Resource Center and one of the programs within the Resource Center is really the focus of our ask for CDBG funds. So, Brandon, if you could advance the slides again. So we have put in a grant application for $25,000, and it would be devoted specifically to housing and essential services, which are provided through our Resource Center. The overall budget for that kind of work within the Resource Center is around $200,000, not yet taking into account the impact of the coronavirus. So the kinds of things that we do under this umbrella of housing and essential services, we outlined in the proposal very quickly, it is eviction prevention, right? It's coming to help people who are at risk of utility shutoff, of being evicted because they're unable to pay rent. We help people apply for Section 8 housing. We absolutely as well do housing searches with people who are actually homeless and then help cover move-in costs to get them housed. As a part of this, one of the things that our navigators do is also provide guidance and help to people who have come for this kind of aid. So it's not just you come in, you get a little bit of help, and then you just fall off the cliff again. They provide help with budgeting and financial management and other things to try and stabilize people so that they don't have to become repeat guests of ours. In addition to that kind of work, there are a lot of essential services that are provided. Making sure people are getting the benefit checks that they deserve, helping them apply for the Oregon Health Plan, even something as simple as securing identification or birth certificates that might help in securing a job, which then allows people again to stabilize so that they don't lose their homes. And then I think I've got one more click here. Yeah, and again, just a reminder, with that kind of funding, the $25,000, which is a small portion of the budget, it does help us achieve the kinds of results that you see here from 2019. And then I just have one last little piece here. Again, Brandon, if you'd advance, just a couple words about the impact of the coronavirus on this aspect of the work that we do at the Resource Center. I will say as a parenthetical, there's other work going on right now through the Resource Center as a result of this coronavirus, which I have not shared here. Michelle can talk about that at great length if you've got questions on it. But very specifically, what has happened at the Resource Center and is constraining our ability to provide the services that we are accustomed to providing is we have literally lost all but one of our volunteers. We have a very, very volunteer-dependent operating model. Most of our volunteers are the age of 65 and over, and very understandably, even before the governor's most recent order to stay at home, most people opted to shelter in place. And because of that, we've lost all of our volunteers. So we faced a tough choice. We had to either say, are we going to shut this resource center when it is so needed, especially now, or do we try to do something else? We made the decision to hire 2 additional part-time navigators. That's allowed us to maintain minimal staffing at the resource center. They actually were existing volunteers, a couple of our younger ones. It does increase our overall budget for this aspect of the resource center from about $210,000 to about $240,000. So that is our ask. We're looking for about $25,000. If there were additional funds available, of course, we would accept those, as that would help us close that gap, that a little bit larger gap that we now are facing because we've had to hire people. And with that, I think Michelle and I are open to questions.
Floor is open.
So I have a question. Well, really a comment. This is Echo Fields. And I'm new to the commission. So actually, Diane, I don't know you and Michelle, although I certainly know your work. I got an email today because it's part of my previous professional life from the Nonprofit Association of Oregon outlining some initial information about what might be available to nonprofits through this stimulus package. I bet you probably get that same email that I do. But it looks like there might be some a little bit of help there for you all in this crisis. I just wanted to mention that in case you hadn't seen that that email.
Thank you, Echo. Is that, are you talking about the national, the federal program that was just passed in the Senate?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, we saw, I actually got a constituent email from Senator Merkley's office and saw that I believe there's $9 billion set aside in there for homeless programs across the United States. We obviously will get if we can get some, it'll be a small amount because the homelessness issues are acute in many large urban areas. But we have our eye on that. We'll be following up with Senator Merkley's office.
Great. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yes, this is Tom Gunderson. I'm looking at the application, and it has, and I'm curious if this is a misunderstanding, that the program administration or admin costs of $58,558, that is 28% of the total. It seems high. Could you clarify that for me?
Michelle, I don't have the budget right in front of me. Do you? And can you clarify that?
The staffing is a key part of us working at the resource center. So they are definitely they provide the mission work. And so a big part of us assisting and working with guests is having the right staff to be able to connect them to the right resources or provide the right resources. And so a big part of what we're able to do is through our amazing team.
And I was thinking that it's probably misleading to call Navigators Administration, and that it just makes it look like administrative costs, which we usually try to keep under 10%, is at 28%. And I don't think you're spending that on overhead. Mm-mm.
No, it's, sorry about that. It should be phrased better. Our administration doesn't ever really go over 15% and usually is close to 10% with the overall overhead.
Okay. Well, at least, I don't know if you see what I'm talking about, but that, I believe answers my question. If it's under 15%, but it's miscategorized in the app.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out to us. That's very helpful. We can always put in a clarification if that would be useful for the commission and for the grant purposes.
Yeah. Other questions? Well, thank you. We're it's amazing to see the wonderful growth that you've gone through the years. It's been really terrific from the very beginnings to a really thriving and vital organization. So thank you so much for making the application and for sharing this news. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. We appreciate that.
Okay.
The work, the work of many hands, many, many hands.
That's right. So has Maslow arrived?
Rich? No? Rich, yep. This is Heidi. I wonder if we could talk and ask Aura representatives to talk about the other proposal that we just got from for meal delivery service. Are you aware?
I don't see why. Why not? Yes.
Are you aware of that application, or?
I'm aware of it. I don't know. Did it get out to all the commissioners?
It did, but I didn't know if that was affordable. It looked like that was Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Is that right or no?
No.
No, it's CDBG Capital.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I actually do have a question about it.
And certainly, I sent that out at the very last minute. We've been scrambling all day to figure out how we could fund this activity. And we're hoping we could fund it with CDBG funds, and we did get confirmation that we could, which is why it was sent out so late. So my apologies for that. It is an eligible activity, and it is eligible as a capital activity. So it's not a public service. It's not subject to that 15%. And it would be funded immediately should you recommend funding it after we send it to the council and they approve the funding. Because we could use money that we already have, essentially.
So, Linda, would you describe it, or would O-Rod describe it very succinctly?
Hi, it's Michelle again. So, of course, everything has changed right now due to the coronavirus, and I've been working with a task force with Kelly Madding and Representative Pam Marsh and different nonprofits in the community to really look at this social distancing and working with those that are unhoused right now and trying to figure out ways to bring food to them to keep it safer. And box lunches, box meals. And so through all of that, Aura does have a large size van, and we do have drivers that were driving for the shelter when the shelter was open. And so Aura is going to take on that piece of the food program and deliver box lunches. We're still working on the exact details of each location that we'll drop off, but we're looking to drop off like 10 lunches per location. Also take out navigation services as well. Medford is doing this right now on the Greenway, and it's quite successful. And so this is like hot off the press. It looks like we're going to implement it next week. And then we're thinking probably 7 stops, but we'll tweak it to what's working best. But we're really working to meet the needs of the community to keep everybody safe.
And this is a capital expense. And how much is it?
Do you have the price in front of you, Linda? I don't have it in front of me.
I actually had a question about that. It seemed like what we got here, I was having a hard time understanding the amounts. So you guys had listed salary 3 hours a day, $15.39 an hour, and then it was times, it looked like it was times 275 days, but then you had this total of $9.23, and I wasn't quite sure where that $9.23 came from. I had figured out $27.70 for the 60 days, and then I did not do the math on these other amounts. Your total on here is $21.51, right. But I think it's going to be So I don't know if anyone else had been looking at some of those calculations.
So I'm just calling it up now. I don't have it right in front of me, so it will take just a second.
So while you do that, I'll explain. So it'll be 7 days a week. The driver will be at least 3 hours a day. And so it will be for the driver as well as the gas in the van. And I'm going to pull it up right in front of me now, but just so you have an idea of what we're talking about, what it's going to look like right now.
Well, can I ask the question of Linda, how does the driver fit as a capital expense, not a service expense?
That's a great question, Rich. It's actually some guidance that was provided by HUD recently. It is under the provision of assistance to businesses, including special economic development assistance. So this is provision of assistance to micro enterprises. That's where we've been struggling all day, was trying to decide what constitutes a micro enterprise. So HUD did make a determination today that a nonprofit organization that is small could qualify as a micro enterprise. And so we can provide essentially grants and loans and other financial assistance to establish, stabilize, and expand micro enterprises that provide medical, food delivery, cleaning, and other services to support home health and quarantine. So it falls under that guidance.
Great. Thank you.
So I also have another question.
I just calculated a salary of $15.39 per hour for 3 hours per day, and that's $46.17 times 60 is $2,770.20.
Right.
So yeah. The total is quite a bit more than $21.51.
Thank you for that. Our grant writer just got back from Mexico and had to rush to get back into the States. So I apologize for the miscalculations. We're all running to catch up with ourselves right now, yeah. But we will definitely correct that.
And I had a question on the vehicle operating costs of 57 cents per mile. Does that include gas?
That is to include gas.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
So the meals being delivered to 7 to 8 separate locations in Ashland, what locations are those? And then how are you guys, I guess, so you're doing this to help with social distancing, is that correct?
Yes.
So how are you guys organizing that?
We're in the process of putting that together with the City of Ashland, with Kelly Matting. We're also working with Jason and Vanessa and had some recommendations from our guests in the community at different locations that we could drop meals off. And so we're in the process of working out the details and also looking at the best practices from Medford, which it's working really well there.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is, I guess, a last call for questions, and then we'll move into our discussion of Kelly's memo, and then we'll move into the staff recommendations, and then our recommendations. Does that sound okay for everybody?
Yes.
Okay.
So
thank you, Michelle and Ola. And we're going to kind of move to the next stage here for our meeting. Thank you.
Do you want us to, Rich, do you want us to do anything on the Affordable Housing Trust Fund or get off the call or?
Well, you don't have to get off the call, but we're not going to deal with the Housing Trust Fund yet. So we're going to try to finish the CDBG decisions, and then we'll move to the Housing Trust Fund.
Okay.
So, yes, you could stay and listen to all of it. This is an open meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Rich?
I have a question. This is Jackie.
Go.
It seems to me that it might be helpful to put the discussion of the Kelly memo after we hear the Affordable Trust Fund presentations.
Or all right, that'd be fine, yeah.
So I'm thinking it might be helpful to have just go right into the trust fund presentations so we hear the whole thing, and then we go ahead and do the memo.
This is Heidi. I think we need to finish CDBG because it's a different pot of money.
Right.
And also, I just redid the total on the meal delivery service, and it's $3,998.20.
Ooh, thank you.
Sorry, I just want to make a little, I think that it's actually going to be $44.87 because there's 15% of total admin fee.
I added
like on the bottom.
Oh, 15%. I didn't do 15%. I
of
just
total
did what
cost.
They already had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 15% of total cost. So it's $44.87.
Okay. Thank you, team.
Thanks,
44.
Yeah.
$44.87. Thank you.
So if we have a total for the supplemental application, can we hear from staff over the staff recommendations for CDBG?
Yes. So as you mentioned earlier, staff pulled out some of the items from the Food Angels application. And so staff is recommending funding the Food Angels $5,525, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, traditionally between Maslow and St. Vincent de Paul, we have done a sort of a proportional allocation of their ask. In this instance, both of those organizations asked for the same amount. So staff is just recommending splitting that 15% in half and providing each organization with essentially half the amount. And then this wasn't in the recommendation, but staff is obviously recommending using some excess capital funds to fund the meal delivery program at $4,487.
Great.
Could I ask where the capital funds, how that figures into the total package?
Do you mean?
So does that come out of the, I don't have the number in front of me, the 26,000?
No. No, it would come out of the larger amount. So all together, we have $357,000, $270,000, but we can only spend the 15%, that 26,000, I think it is, on capital or on social services, which are two main applications that we have. So both the Food Angels and the meal program would come out of the remaining, whatever that is, like 300 and a lot, 300,000 plus, if that makes sense. Is that what you were asking, Heidi?
Yes, yes. That. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I've been listening to all this, I'm in favor of the staff recommendations, but I wonder if people either have questions or ideas other than the staff recommendations that they would like to throw out. I'm not hearing that. Do we have everybody here? Heidi, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I had a question if any of the capital projects in the Ashland affordable housing, I'm sorry, what am I thinking? If any of the ORA expenses in the housing trust fund would qualify for the larger CDBG funds that are not capital improvement, but capital funds?
Not at this time, because it's service, all service stuff.
Okay. So the meal delivery, isn't that service?
It falls under a different category, actually. So if, it's a special economic development assistance. It's kind of a stretch. We are being creative.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? This is Echo.
So?
We didn't talk about Maslow, did we?
We haven't talked much about them because we saw their applications and they've been in several times, I would say. So right. I think many of us feel good about what they do and an understanding that they're not here is not helpful necessarily, but I do think most of us have been really familiar with what they're doing by reading their grants and the history of making presentations.
Okay,
so comfort.
Go ahead. Well, it's just as a new person, I don't have that history. So.
Yeah. I think my comfort with it is that they are both highly needed. They're both doing great work, and that we have so little to give to them that it's very difficult to try to separate out which one should get more and which one should get less. You could make arguments on all sides, and so I think the splitting down the middle we've done before, just because they do each rate very high on our priority list.
Okay.
And I believe that Maslow did send us a presentation, and I thought that I had sent it out to you all.
Which I have. I've got it on my computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Echo, this is Jackie. I just want to say that I also, I'm so impressed with what Maslow does, and particularly their connection with the children in the schools, because, you know, that's a daily contact that they have, even in a situation like we have going now. So they have their niche with the families they serve, and then Aura, of course, has their niche in how they get to the people they serve. So
I've had many students over the years who did their practica at Maslow, so I'm pretty familiar with it.
Yeah.
And I know the need is just going to increase for housing after this mess that we're all living through.
The sad thing is that the pot is so small that to split, you know, it's not enough, but at least we give to both of them, yeah.
Right.
If I understood correctly, this is for Maslow, it's supportive services for the homeless to house program, which is actually putting families into housing.
Right.
So this isn't the part of it that would qualify for housing trust fund monies. This is social services, the wraparound services.
Right.
It was exciting to read about the project that they are involved in with Snowberry and some of the other, the Transitional Warming Center. I wasn't aware of that. And I also didn't know if they still do street outreach.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all questions I'd love to ask them, but they're not here.
But street outreach is on their PowerPoint.
Yeah. So they do great things.
They do.
Yeah.
They deserve it.
I'm wondering whether we're ready to make a vote on a recommendation, and I wondered if someone wanted to formulate that for us. So
I move that we accept the, or we agree with the city recommendations for splitting the funds.
I second.
With,
I think we need to say more.
Oh, sorry.
So the amounts are on page 13 of the packet. So for Maslow, it's $13,392. For ORA, it's $13,392. And for Food Angels, the amount is $5,525.
And also for ORA Meal Program, it's $4,487.
Excellent.
Excellent. So with those totals, that is the motion. And is there a second for that motion? Is that you, Jackie?
Sure, I'll be happy to second.
Second.
Okay. So there could be discussion.
And
hearing none.
I think as we vote, we need to vote individually is what I've learned from the past.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I'm not I'm not on my thing seeing everybody's. Would each counselor that's voting say your name and your vote? So I'll start. It's Rich, and I vote yes.
Why don't we call roll?
Okay, sorry. Tom, and I vote yes.
I could just read the list of commissioners.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we have, so far we've had Rich, Echo.
Yes.
Gina.
Yes.
Linda Rapon.
She's abstaining.
Okay. Abstaining.
Aaron Crowley.
Yes.
Tom Gunderson.
Yes.
Jackie Bachman.
Yes.
Heidi Parker. Yes.
And you got Chris?
No, I don't have Chris.
Chris? Yes.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, go.
All right. Well, we've made it this far. Not bad. We're going into the Housing Trust Fund applicant presentation. And so I would say we hear from the applicants and then go to Kelly's recommendations and then our recommendations.
And I should preface this by saying that I have spoken with all of the applicants and let them know that at this time, we are unsure whether the Affordable Housing Trust Fund allocations will be moving forward. Just to let them, you know that they're welcome to talk about their projects and answer any questions that you may have. Hopefully they will be moving forward in the future. Just right now they're uncertain.
So do we have folks there now? Because I can't see.
Yes, all of the applicants are on the call.
Okay, so shall we start with the cottage presentation? I think it's Steve.
Sure, and I believe that Sean also provided a presentation.
Yes, hello everyone. I'm glad I get to see, I've listened to your voices for so long, I'm glad I get to see your faces.
All right.
I love Linda's poster, Picture the Best. She's really excited in her picture, so Linda, I hope to see yours and Rich's faces and everyone else. So I turned in a kind of more of a staff commission comments and question presentation today, and I don't know if this morning, and I don't know if the commission had the opportunity to look at that and if everyone received that. And so it was more in direct response to the staff's evaluation on my project. So the cottage ordinance, as you're aware, is fairly new. I think I was, and Brandon could probably correct me if I'm wrong on this one, the third one in the city to get approved for this style of housing. And that was one of the Planning Commission's goals of creating the cottage ordinance, was to create smaller lots to make more opportunities for affordable housing. Now, with that said, my project, I am a not a developer, but I'm a very hands-on person. I have multiple chemical sensitivities, and so my home was built very non-toxic. And the building that's going into the unit was built non-toxic. So from everything that I read, every SDS sheet and every MSDS sheet that went in, and we found alternative products that would use. It did drive the builder, gave him a little bit of hair pulls a few times. When I said, no, you can't use that. No, you can't use that. But when you walked into my home, once it was done, there is no smell of new construction, right? There is no smell of lacquer, anything like that. And everything was built as if it was a $1 million home in a very small scale. The next thing I found was that there wasn't a lot of contractors willing to build small, right? So I know that you're aware that a long time ago, homes were built at a very small scale. And then over the decades, houses got bigger, right? And so into my presentation, that's one of the things I talk about, is how to evaluate a small home. I'll kind of get to that. So I'm glad that the staff found that my application was acceptable, right? I met the resolutions. I am providing affordable housing, and I met several of the council goals, right? And I like the quote that the cottage housing proposal is interesting and innovative. I love that. So I put a lot of emphasis on making this home livable for anyone with any underlying issues or who wants a clean space, right? I am an outdoors person, and so I like to not necessarily have to clean a large home. I like to live in a comfortable space and modestly, and be able to garden and go outdoors. So that's kind of a history on it. I am a workforce, that I moved in here into Ashland back in 2009. I was qualified to buy a home, but it is a frenzy out there. And I don't know if anyone has recently tried to buy a home in Ashland. It is a very competitive market to get a house under $379,000, right? They're very limited right now. When evaluating, I met with staff, and when evaluating the income levels that I could qualify for, where I want to price it, I really want our workforce to be able to live in Ashland like I enjoy to do. So with that said, I just want to kind of highlight some of the questions that the staff had based on their evaluation. One of the questions was, will that property be deed restricted as affordable? Yes, the unit number one will be deed restricted to sell at an affordable price. Right. And I want to make sure that you're all aware that I'm targeting a household for a one and two person household, because it's a one bedroom unit. I'm not just targeting a two person household, which changes the income qualifications. In my staff also had concerns about what the profits would be used towards. I mentioned that in my application, even though it wasn't a requirement, to show that the money used is going right back into the local economy and not into other investments out of the area, right? It wasn't necessarily to say I'm going to have another house on the market right away for sale. My initial goal was actually I want to have a home for my family so my daughter would be able to live next to us. That's kind of being selfish and keeping her here. So that was kind of my goal. And it's probably hard, and maybe more of you can contest to this, is those individuals that have lived here their whole life and just graduated from SOU, right? Teachers and different things, you know, gaining back that entry level position, are they able to buy a home in Ashland? I know several of my acquaintances that I talk to, they're moving to Talent. They just bought a home in Phoenix. They just bought a home in Central Point. They just bought a home in Medford. They bought a fixer-upper. And every time of them, I'm like, did you hear about how you can get down payment assistance? Did you hear about how you can get this? And they're not necessarily aware of that. And so in our workforce, the individuals that might not be doing all the good work that you guys are doing with the social services pieces that we are not aware, and I'd like to speak with the workforce, necessarily of all the programs that they're available to, because it took me a lot of time to learn what the programs were available myself. So the staff's comments also, they agree that the targeted income group has a documented need, but are concerned that I'm targeting too high of an income. Now, unlike the CDBG funds, for most groups above the 80% mark, which is, we have to switch gears from thinking 80% and below, and now we're thinking gears of workforce at 80% and above, up to 120%, that a one person, the income limits on the website set it by salary, and I really want to, in my documentation that you have, put it in a hourly wage perspective, right? Which is in there to kind of identify more of what it means and how much I'm going to make, and how a hardworking individual in Ashland can easily get awarded for their hard work, but that raise would automatically disqualify them from other subsidies and programs. To put it in perspective, on average, a two-person household has a max for the 120% is $63,000. On average, for that two-person, if they're working full-time, each individual, they would have to average $15.30. If they average the city of Ashland living wage of $15.39, they would automatically disqualify themselves from any affordable housing program currently offered, right? And then there, you know, the Oregon Bond Program, which is also referenced in my application, their targeted income is up to $90,000 for a three-person household for our area. Our area is considered a targeted area, so it has a lot higher standard, and it almost goes up to 350. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. 350 to 379,000 to qualify, which has raised dramatically since I've last looked into the program. Minimum wage. I know that HUD will probably adjust for minimum wage. I assume that at $11.25 for that same two-person family, right? If they work full-time, two individuals will automatically make more than the 80% AMI, right? Now, there's variables in that full-time based on health insurance policies, right, is anything above 29 hours, right? So when you start looking into labor laws, right, you can still be considered full-time. If you work very hard, that could disqualify you for the CDBG funded developments. I also want to kind of point out in the housing analysis, right, which will probably, and I talk a lot, Rich, so please stop me if I need to.
I would just Sean, I just say, can you wrap up in 2 or 3 minutes?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So the housing analysis, I just want to point out that based on the housing analysis that was done in 2012, that the city of Ashland has to come up with 4,600 more owner-occupied units, right? With the most of those needing to be targeted to under 120% AMI. Right. And so when we talk about affordable housing, I just want to make sure that affordable housing is at any income limit. I really want you to consider that. So there is also concern of the subsidy amount I chose. And in my presentation, I chose 20% of project total when I could have went up to 50% of project total. And there are some other examples of what I researched in there to get to that number. The 10 years affordability period, the ordinance and resolution doesn't actually require a set period of affordability. And so I followed the Oregon Bond Affordable Recapture Fee Program. And so with that said, I just really have these questions for the commission and potentially staff to answer. Right, is what is an acceptable subsidy request, right? And also, what is an acceptable affordability time frame? And I think I sped through it really fast. Poof. And that's what I have. So if I open it up for questions.
Great, thank you. Floor is open for questions, comments. Well, I have a comment, and that is, I really do appreciate program that you've put out, because I have a close friend who has the same level of need for housing that you're doing, and it's a wonderful person that cannot find a spot in Ashland completely. And it's really a tragedy that we don't have more of this. And so you've really stepped forward with a good direction. And so I'm hoping that you'll continue to go forward with that. I'm sure you will.
Okay, thank you.
This is Echo. And because I'm new, I kind of don't feel I can say very much because I lack a lot of context and information. So don't take anything I say to be gospel, because I'm definitely not qualified. I too am concerned about not just low income housing, but workforce housing. So having recently retired from SOU, I can tell you that incoming new faculty with PhDs are starting annual salaries of, I think it's maybe up to about $59,000 a year, which is still somewhat below 120% of AMI. So I certainly know some younger, newly hired faculty who have a need for the kind of project that you're describing, and for a single person, maybe with one spouse, a smaller unit would be welcome. So I too was really frustrated. I noticed in your memo today that we got, one of the things that I was thinking about is how frustrating it is to have CBDG money, but not be able to find contractors who are willing to work with that because of BOLI and environmental regulations. So it creates a real catch-22 that I find deeply distressing as well. And beyond that, I don't think I'm really qualified to say very much. I'm sorry, Sean.
Well, thank you for your comments.
This is Jackie. Okay. Can you hear me? I just want to thank Sean for the thoroughness of his proposal, and that I think you are really in the forefront with these kinds of proposals coming forward. So don't give up. Keep doing this regardless of what happens. Keep bringing workforce housing to Ashland, because this is a concept we really want to see more of.
I'd like to say Sean, thank you for doing the projects you're doing. They look great. And I do think there's a need in Ashland for this workforce housing, small workforce housing. And I really appreciate you adding additional information so that we could more fully understand the time limit on affordability, being willing to increase the number of years to have the property remain somewhat affordable is really great. So thank you.
Thank you.
So Sean, I think we're gonna go ahead and move to the next trade, next section here for us. And thank you, and we will, you can stay on the line and hear where we're at. So the next group up would be Umpqua. Are they here?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Hello, everyone.
NeighborWorks.
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Brian Shelton Kelly. I'm the Director of Acquisitions and Development with NeighborWorks Umpqua. We're a regional community development corporation based in Roseburg, but we work throughout Southern Oregon. We work in both the rental housing sphere and the homeownership sphere. I will have to say that I think Sean, you know, really did a great job of laying out the context and the situation and the kind of need for workforce housing and affordable ownership housing, especially in Ashland. I think, like everyone else, NeighborWorks Umpqua has been rapidly adapting to the situation that we all find ourselves in, and you know what that means and how that impacts our projects and our planning and our operations is evolving by the day. That said, we are looking, you know, forward and looking at, you know, what will be a recovery period and the need for housing that's affordable, both rental and ownership opportunities, is going to be ever more important, maybe even more important than it was before. And it was certainly very important before. So just with that, you know, with that, we do understand the choices and decisions that all communities and folks are having to make about resource allocation given the situation. But also, you know, we are committed to the region and, you know, look forward to continuing to partner with communities to address housing needs. We submitted an application for the Housing Trust Fund to help us both strengthen and expand a particular affordable housing model known as the Community Land Trust model. And this is a model where land is secured and held by a community-based or a mission-oriented organization like a nonprofit. And then they work to build affordable homes on that land. The homes are then sold to income-eligible buyers who own the improvements and lease the land from the land trust. This has proven to be a great method of establishing affordable housing, and what's really great about it, at least what we think is really great about it, is it's permanently affordable housing. The land remains held in trust by that community based organization. The homes are therefore affordable for the duration of their existence. It's a great way to kind of maximize subsidy and ensure kind of a continual source of affordable ownership housing in a community. Community land trusts tend to work really well in high cost housing environments, which I think Ashland meets every definition of that category. Several years ago, NeighborWorks Umpqua inherited a group of community land trust communities in Ashland that have been developed by Rogue Valley CDC, totaling about 30 units in three different communities. And we've been stewarding those units and those communities and working with those residents ever since. I believe the transfer occurred in about 2012, 2013. We've learned a lot in that process. We've also started to become more connected with the national and regional community land trust networks, and through that have realized that we need to make some changes and some upgrades and modifications to the current land trust kind of framework and some of the documents that govern those communities, and to really make sure that they're sustainable and can be stewarded for the long term. And then we're also looking at working with Access on transferring their small portfolio of community land trust units to our organization, so we could kind of take over that role from them, kind of optimize what each organization does best in that sphere, and then look at expanding the number of community land trust units in Ashland. So we've crafted this as a capacity building approach, both to strengthen our current land trust stewardship abilities and expand the land trust model. The state of Oregon has a really unique and innovative financing source called the LIFT Local Innovation Fast Track Program. These are state-issued general obligation bonds that the state is using to advance affordable housing. And a few years ago, the legislature amended that program to allow that financing source to be used for home ownership projects. And the way it will essentially work is through a land lease or community land trust model. Our proposal and our goal was to take 2020 to find some land, do our due diligence on that land to be ready to apply for a LIFT award in the 2021 LIFT allocation or LIFT cycle that OHCS has on the calendar for early 2021. That said, with the impacts of the pandemic, schedules and prior plans may be subject to change and revision, and all that will remain to be seen. But we would like to work to develop a project, go through the pre-development work, and have that location and a project in Ashland be quote unquote application or close to shovel ready for that resource opportunity when it opens.
Brian, I'm wondering, because of our time situation, I'm wondering if we could pause a moment and get Orod to come in, Michelle, to do a her presentation, and then come back to you with questions. Would that be possible?
That is, and I was just wrapped up, so that this is a great pausing point.
Okay, thank you. And if we can, we're going to have Michelle come in and share their housing trust fund request, and then we can do questions, and then we'll go back to Brian's questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So Aura submitted an application to fund the Resource Center and the Winter Shelter for the next winter shelter season. So of that is we are handing out tents and sleeping bags because people don't have other options for that. We've had to add additional staff. We are getting tokens for laundromats. We are helping get food to people. So we're really working to step in to the community in a bigger way, as there's less resources right now because it's so important for people to take care of themselves and social distancing. And so we would like to adjust our proposal to meet the need of most what's most needed right now within this 3-month time frame, and really look to continue to cover operations in a big and bold way, because right now resources have been restricted when it comes to we can't have our event, which we had scheduled at the end of April, and everything is just different than it ever was before. But I feel that it's incredibly important for us to continue our navigation services and continue to have the Resource Center up and running strong, and to even add to that right now with more navigation services. We have other nonprofits, even some in Medford, referring to Aura in Ashland about the services if they need something to check with us, which is a compliment, but just a lot of services. And so I'm going to hand it over to Diane, who's going to be talking a little bit about the organization as a whole, and provide you with her perspective as our board president. Diane?
Thanks, Michelle. And I'm going to apologize before I start this. I've been off and on with connectivity here. I'm not sure what's happening. I've run downstairs several times to reboot my modem, so I hope I stay with you. We had some slides that we had prepared. Brandon, if you could put those up. But to Michelle's point, these slides address what we put in the proposal. We understand that the city is looking at other ways of trying to expand these funds. And Michelle has already spoken a bit to that, but let me just quickly go over what we put in the proposal as further context, and then we can take questions. So our total request in the proposal was $110,000. $35,000 of it was for, again, for the Resource Center, specifically, again, for housing and essential services. So funding very much the same kinds of programmatic work as you saw under the CDBG proposal. And then the remaining $75,000 was for our winter shelter for the 2021 season, not for the season that we've just closed. So Brandon, if you could advance my slide. So, and one more time, please. One more click. There we go. So we had thought of this, that these two proposals is working in tandem, with $25,000 from CDBG and then an additional $35,000 from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to fund those housing and essential services that I spoke to earlier in the meeting. Obviously, based on your recommendation, we will not be getting the $25,000 from CDBG. We are thankful for any amount that we actually can get for this, because the Resource Center is really the heart and soul of Aura's programmatic work. We are open 12 months of the year, 5 days of the week, and so it's very important that we get funding for our Resource Center. And then our next slide, this actually outlines for you how we think about the $75,000 we had put in the proposal. This was to partially fund the winter shelter for the 2021 season. It covers nearly 25% of that budget. I think you all know, although our shelter season runs from November through March, our case management for the guests that we welcome during that shelter season, that case management continues throughout the year. And that's essential because we've built a relationship with them through our navigator. And she continues to work with them to move them from that state of instability of not being housed and, in fact, move them into housing. You see below a reminder of the kind of results that we got for our winter shelter season that just closed, with 266 services provided. 28 people were housed. Not in our shelter, but actually we're moved into permanent housing. 12 jobs were secured. And then every night that we were open, we had 40 or more guests. So a lot of people came through that shelter this winter. I do have to just do a shout out here for our volunteers, which I skimmed over above. that that budget of $75,000, or excuse me, of $308,000, that doesn't include the does not include the value of the 4,500 volunteer hours that are dedicated to the winter shelter. We have an enormous number of volunteers working in all aspects of our programmatic work, and the commitment of our winter shelter volunteers is phenomenal. If I just price them at roughly minimum wage, which is a little bit of a disservice to them, that's a $70,000 value. It's one of the reasons we can operate a shelter so inexpensively compared with some of the shelters elsewhere in the Rogue Valley. So then the next slide is just a bit about the impact of the coronavirus. I spoke earlier about the impact on the resource center and the need to hire additional navigators because we've lost all our volunteers. And then Brandon, if you could just click through, I think twice, one more time for me. Thank you. You'll see that for our winter shelter, again, this virus has had been a challenge for us. We had to close 10 days earlier. We did not have the volunteers to keep it open. And more significantly, we couldn't meet Oregon Health Authority standards for distancing, given how the shelter is set up. As I mentioned earlier, the case management for our guests does continue. We were able to get 10 of our most vulnerable people into lodging through March. Oh my gosh, we are so grateful to Linda Rapon for stepping forward and helping us with that acute need we had for those folks. We have some people in car camping. We have some people outfitted with coats and sleeping bags. And as I mentioned earlier, the updated numbers for how many people housed, which was 28, I think, and Michelle, you'd have to speak to this. You know the facts much more than I do here. I think some of the people that I've got listed here of 12 in vehicles and 12 with coats and sleeping bags, I think some of those people actually moved into housing, which is terrific. It is impossible to predict at this moment the human and the financial impact of this virus for our 2021 season. We are operating without a clear roadmap here. So we're going to have to wait and see as to whether or not this continues to have a significant impact on how we operate in the winter season. And then just a point here about the laundry shower trailer so you get the full picture of this virus for us. We had to close our laundry shower trailer. Again, a lack of volunteers. And we have to do some more research to really understand, can we operate that laundry shower trailer safely? We would love to get it reopened. And once we complete our research, if we could add a part-time staff person for just 9 months, that would go a long way. We've got some indication we might pick up a couple of volunteers, I think, through the United Way, which would help us a lot. But we do need some staffing for that shelter, or excuse me, for that trailer in order to stabilize it. And I think that's all we have. As Michelle mentioned, we know that there's some discussion about trying to preserve some of those trust fund monies for other purposes for the city, given this crisis. Whether you choose to fund exactly what we laid out in the proposal, I can tell you, and this is just repeating what Michelle said, that $110,000 is close to 3 months of operating expenses for us. So if you choose, you know, to divert the money and follow Kelly's recommendation, then we could still use those funds. We would just use it for operating expenses more broadly, and it would be a godsend for us to have those funds. Michelle, anything else you want to add there?
I think that you summarized it very well, Diane, and you know, we really see ourselves as a hub here in Ashland for services for the unhoused. And also something that we don't talk about a lot is we do quite a bit of work with people that are really struggling to keep their house and work with them with services to keep them in their housing, which is so huge, because once they lose that, as everybody knows, it's so hard to get back into it. And so Aura is stepping up in a really big way right now to support our community through this really challenging time.
So any support right. is incredibly appreciated and much needed. And really considering the work that we do with our team of eight and our phenomenal board of directors, we're a tight ship.
Michelle,
yes.
Hold on, because we're under a time crunch. So I'm going to open for 5 minutes of questions, and then we're going to go back to questions from Umpqua. So we're already past our deadline. So we're moving quickly now. So commissioners, are there questions that we could ask now for Michelle, because you were leaving at 6?
Yes, I'm teaching class at 6. I apologize.
Right. So just very quickly, can we get some questions if you have them?
I'm good.
Echo?
Can I just clarify exactly what you guys are asking for right now? Is it the 110? Because the email that we got from Kelly made it seem like we were going to not spend or reserve all the $216,000? Is that correct?
I can't speak to that. I can tell you what we put in our proposal, and if you choose not to fund what we requested in the proposal, we'll take whatever funds we can get at this time as operating support for our resource center.
Okay, but you're asking for $110,000. That's
yes.
Including coronavirus. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I do have a question, Rich, because of what Aaron just got me thinking about. So in Kelly's memo from dated yesterday, she says that there's $216,000 total in the housing trust fund. In the staff recommendations, if we followed those, which I'm not sure we will, but if we do, that's not spending $216,000. Linda, maybe, am I reading that correctly? We actually, if the staff recommendation spends less, the staff recommendation is to spend less than $216,000.
Yes.
That is correct, but I think we ought to direct our questions that we have to ORA, not about those. We're going to do that. We, as a commission, are going to discuss those, that request from Kelly and where we are. We now need just questions to ORA if you have them.
I don't. I just needed to make sure I understood the context.
Okay. Yep.
I just want to say thank you. Am I muted?
I just
want to say thank you. That huge volunteer force that you have is something I worked on for years, and I'm so happy that there's now a much more professional organization that's running this whole thing, and I'm eternally grateful for ORA.
That is kind of you, and we are eternally grateful for you and every other volunteer that we've had the pleasure of working with. It's been phenomenal.
I'm going to jump off. I'll leave anything else to Diane. I'm sorry. I got to get my Zoom going for my class. Thank you, everybody. Right. I appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye, Michelle.
Bye.
Okay. Umpqua, do we have questions? Would you like to come in again? Sean?
I'm here.
Hello?
Well, Sean is at Umpqua.
No. Oh, no, I was looking for Umpqua.
Yeah. Okay.
Or,
I thought I heard that.
Brian here from NeighborWorks Umpqua.
And there I'm you
go. Do you have, are you open for questions or a final piece?
I don't really have a final piece, but I'm definitely open to questions.
I have a question. In your proposal, you mentioned that the grounded solutions model land lease is like a homeowners association versus the current model. Can you just briefly explain what that means?
Sure. So In the current three community land trust communities we steward in Ashland, there was, when they were initially developed, there was a decision made to not form a homeowners association for those communities. The national model, and I think the best practice and what practitioners have learned over the years is, it can be really important to have a homeowners association to give residents and owners a mechanism to organize, make decisions, and have some way of addressing issues that might come up, and also a formal way to make decisions about how to spend reserves or what projects to undertake or those kind of issues that come up that without kind of a formal structure and mechanism can be difficult, especially when there's transition in the communities and kind of initial owners who may have had one understanding and one relationship with their neighbors move out and someone else comes in. And so creating that more formal structure via an HOA is what we've learned and what others are doing and we think is what we need to do.
So as a commission, we've heard a number of complaints relating to homeowners associations and how they can increase costs for low-income renters, so our owners. Can you talk about that a little? What kind of...
Yeah, so, right. So I think one of the key differences here might be, and there could be the potential for increased costs, but the goal here is really to work with the residents and give them a collective means to make decisions. If they, you know, for example, at one of our communities, one of their concerns is kind of landscaping upkeep, and they've actually said, you know, we'd be willing to pay more for additional upkeep, but right now we don't really have a means of doing that, and so I think it's forming an HOA in that context would be a way for them to make decisions about how they both secure a raise and then spend money for things that benefit their neighborhood and community. So, you know, our method is really more participatory one based in resident engagement. And it's really looking at what are the needs and how can those needs be addressed.
Brian, this is Echo. I'm actually president of an HOA. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to second what you just said. Having a more collaborative, collectivist, participatory model of decision making is what's really critical. So I totally support you on that. I do have a question about the line items in your budget for technical assistance, consulting, and legal and professional fees. Have you identified the sources for those services?
So for the technical assistance and consulting, we would most likely reach out to Proud Ground. Proud Ground is a community land trust in Portland. They have about 200 units under stewardship and are kind of one of the regional leaders, and they offer technical assistance to other organizations. The legal, we have an attorney that we use for our real estate and corporate matters that's familiar with CLTs and would probably be the go-to on that one.
Thank you.
I also wanted to ask, is your timeline crucial? Do you need this money immediately or soon?
So I think the critical, the time sensitive element would be having some resources to prepare, to find a site and then prepare for that upcoming LIFT application in 2021. And it would likely take, you know, kind of the remainder of the year to as you all know, land is not a abundant commodity in Ashland. And so I think that, you know, there's some urgency around the timeline there. That said, again, everyone's timelines are to be determined at this stage, given what's going on. We would like to advance the land trust capacity building and modernization work. There could be some flexibility in that timeline, though.
Thank you.
Okay. If everybody's got their questions in, I want to point out that we're 5 minutes over our deadline, And I apologize. I know the technicalities of this is new. Is there anyone who can't spend another half hour on this phone call? Hello?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, my computer's going out, but anyway. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to have Linda present the memo that we've all read and get us up to date on what that is. Can we do that? This is the memo from Kelly Madding, who for the next 2 weeks is our city administrator.
I will try my best to present this. My understanding is that due to the state of emergency declaration, I believe that Kelly is feeling like the council is not willing to make any allocations of this funding at this time. And because she has essentially the discretion to redirect funds without going through the established city process, and that the Affordable Housing Trust funds right now are the most flexible and available funding source the city has, that I think she is just wanting to let the commission know that even if you make funding decisions about or funding recommendations about this fund now, that those may not move forward at the council level because the council is fielding so many requests and trying to be flexible with this fund. So that was my understanding based on what Kelly and I talked about and based on the memo.
Can I ask a question? So is she saying to push forward the $110,000 for Aura, but not push forward anything else?
Yeah. You know, I would say it's unclear. I don't think she is saying to push forward the $110,000. I think she is recognizing that right now Aura is providing a lot of the services that the city is being asked to provide, essentially. And so to some extent, she recognizes that they are needing funding to continue offering those services. So I think my understanding is that she recognizes that some of this money will need to go to Aura anyway, with the understanding that maybe we should not fund the winter shelter for next year right now and instead hold that money back with the idea that we may be having to put people who are homeless into hotel rooms to be quarantined, and how will we pay for that? We'll have to use this money. So, I mean, that's kind of the example that I think we've been thinking.
And, you know, excuse me, this is Gina, because when I read and it says solely funding Aura, so to me that says all of the money, or is that wrong?
Well, it also says for the next 3 months. And in the discussion that we had with Kelly, she had asked me to contact Aura and ask them to sort of look at what do you need to get by for the next couple of months, not including, you know, what you're for the future.
I think if everybody has a little bit of clarity about what's in that, the next point of discussion is whether we accept that recommendation, which would really sort of cancel our discussion for the housing trust fund, or do we have another perceived ways of going, which I would think there is, but I'm opening that discussion now.
I think that my concern would be that, I mean, I want us to talk about what are the needs that we have for this current emergency, but not necessarily ignore the future, because we can't not have a winter shelter next year. So that would be just something that that is in my mind, is that we're going to have a lot of issues if we can't give financial support to a winter shelter for next year.
Mm-hmm. And Echo here.
Yeah, we'll be back in the space. Sorry.
Okay.
So it's like everything that I'm reading, and I'm reading a lot, suggests that there will probably be a rebound in infection rates in the fall, so that we may be looking at a very similar situation that we're in now when we get to October and November, which is when the winter shelter would kick in anyway. So I'm just going to second what Erin just said.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we were just creating a bigger problem. We'd be back in the same boat.
Well,
I'd like to speak to the fact that it's taken us, 11 years to have money actually put into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And I understand these are extraordinary times. And I'm not thinking we won't fund ORA. I think we should. I don't understand why we wouldn't go ahead with $110,000 immediately, because they can use those funds. I got the same email that a lot of people got from Senator Merkley saying, in this new bailout package that just got passed, there are a lot of funds that are coming to homeless services and emergency COVID-19 virus responding to that, to healthcare workers and hospitals. So I would only recommend taking trust fund money and applying it to something else if Kelly Madden could assure us that the money we take out would be backfilled by some of the federal grant money that's going to come in.
Heidi, can I jump in here on that point? I'm looking at the email from National Nonprofit Association for Oregon, the Oregon chapter, summarizing that bill. And it calls, here's what the email says, the bill also calls for large infusions of cash to the following sectors, and it includes $5 billion to the Community Development Block Grant, and $4 billion in emergency solutions grants to help families who are experiencing homelessness or are at risk of losing their homes, and then $3 billion in rental assistance to low-income Americans. Now, how fast that money flows, who knows?
Yeah.
But that's sort of the outline of the bill.
So I talked to our HUD representative today, and they too have heard that we will be receiving some HUD additional CDBG funding, and that hopefully that CDBG funding will have some of its restrictions lifted so that we can use it in ways that we generally can't. Because obviously we already have CDBG funds, we just can't use them the way that people are needing us to use them now. Similarly, I heard that we will be also receiving some emergency shelter grant funding. We, as a city, do not receive that money directly. It goes to our CAP agency or community action agency and then gets distributed, as probably all of the ORA people know, to services that provide shelter services, or to providers who provide shelter services. And so we have less control over that. I did hear that that rollout would be in 30 days or less is what I was told, but we don't really know that that is going to happen for sure. We have been told that our estimate would be $100,000. That's what Ashland would receive, but we aren't sure of that either. So we're not sure of the timeline. We're not sure the restrictions will be lifted, and we're not sure of the amounts, but we do know that there will be something.
Something, this is Jackie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to say, ORA right now, with our staff, a pretty incredible staff right now, they have boots on the ground that are all over this city, putting in incredible amounts of hours and so much expertise in what they're doing, because these are social workers. These are people who are trained to work with people who are traumatized and with very critical needs. My concern is that if we don't give some pretty substantial support to Aura for the navigation piece right now, because with this pandemic, it's the navigation services that are going to be absolutely crucial to helping all these people that are going to be lining up. They're already lining up 40 people, you know, coming in on a Monday, you know, every day now, trying to get assistance. So my concern is we have this money now. If we could at least support Aura at a pretty good clip so we can get through this, and then we can apply for money, of course, down the road and do our donation events and all of those things. And we will. I mean, we're working nonstop on those things. But I really think we need to have the boots on the ground, and they're here. They're already here. We have the staff to do these things.
Well, yeah. So, you know, this is Gina, and something that I wanted to retract what I said earlier after looking at an email and listening to your statements. I agree that this is boots on the ground, and we don't know how long it would take to get the funding. And we have this in front of us now. And by taking care of what we can now, maybe we can flatten that curve for winter time, for fall and for winter. And we can take care of our people now.
So, Diane, I have a question, because I had asked if that 110 included everything you guys needed for implementing some of the extra things for what's going on with coronavirus. So is that $35,000 included? So if we approved that 110, $35,000 of that, is that for this boots on the ground? Or, Jackie, are you talking about a different amount of money?
So
My point is that the boots on the ground right now at our resource center are having to do far more because of the pandemic. And when this grant was written, I don't think we were thinking of, you know, what was going to happen with COVID-19. So now it's not, I think it's more than $35,000 that's going to be needed over the next 3 months for Aura. I think it's more like you're looking at $30,000 a month to keep the staff and to do what we need to do.
So I can just echo what Becky just said. So, you know, our original proposal, written long before COVID reared its ugly head, included that $35,000 for housing and essential services programs at the resource center. Jackie's quite right that things now have changed. We have had to hire staff because of the lack of volunteers, and we've got a lot of work before us. You heard Michelle speak of the work that we're trying to add on of helping with food distribution. That's just a small example. So our run rate at the resource center is about $35,000, $40,000 a month. If we could take the $110,000 and divert it for the short term, to these more immediate needs, we certainly could do that. And then, as Jackie said, we're going to be back in the business of trying to raise funds to make sure that our winter shelter gets fully funded for next year.
And I just want to add one thing. I want to add a visual picture for you. Picture the high school football field, and that the city needs to build a very large structure and put in 200 cots for people who are dealing with COVID. Now picture the families related to all those people in that structure, and what they're gonna be going through in terms of needing assistance from navigators. So Aura is gonna be one of those organizations that'll be a hub in our town for getting navigators to all those families, working with those people, connecting them. So that's just one image of what could happen in the next 4 weeks.
Okay, that I think that helps. I feel like
Go ahead, and then I want to get in. I'm supposed to be running it, but go ahead, and then I'll put in my piece.
No, I guess I'm feeling unclear what is being asked of us. I feel like I'm just hearing some different things. So,
let me just say that I think that the question that is asked for us is to stop really approving housing trust funds. I think that the original thing said, let's give the 110 to ORA, which I think makes sense. What doesn't make sense to me is unplanful crisis thinking at this point. I know we've got a lot on there. We have people doing boots on the ground, but we also have very limited money that's gone into the housing trust fund that needs to be continued. And I'm against the recommendation from Kelly that somehow she is going to need sort of an unlimited slush fund to deal with something that we don't even know what it is. When we have the opportunity to recommend the ORA money, which could be used right now for whatever reason, any grant that comes from a granting agency is always available to be changed. That's every grant we've ever put in, you always say, well, this is something new, you ask for it. But that change is based on thoughtful planning, not, oh my God, we've got to do this. We're going to build up a 20,000 cot somewhere. No. We're going to do thoughtful planning. We have the time to do that. We also have the best grant that's in there, which is the Umpqua grant, which is their grant is the solution for affordable housing from the standpoint of finding permanent homes, at low income that stays there forever, and they can do that work, and they will do that work if we do that. Left over is another $40,000. There's nothing in my mind that in the next month we need $40,000 more for what? I mean, if we do, then we could have a plan to use that. But to say that we're just going to only give to ORA and then the rest of it is left to the city council to somehow, or our Kelly is going to be there for another couple weeks. We need to be the source of thoughtful planning. And so my view, and then I'll stop, is that we recommend $110,000 for ORA. We recommend the $4,000 for their food distribution, and we recommend the $40,000 for whatever it is for Umpqua, and that the rest remains in the housing trust fund. Remembering that her emergency, she says, I can take money from anywhere, and that includes the housing trust fund. There's $30 million in our budget. She could take it from somewhere else, not a place where it's been really needed for the mission that we have. And so that's why I'm going to vote I'm going to hope that we vote to recommend those programs going forward.
I would like to say I agree with you on that. And I think the need for affordable housing is going to be even greater in the next year. I think the Umpqua Works, NeighborWorks Umpqua, is a phenomenally low-cost, great deal that allows a lot of the affordable housing that's already here, the land trust-based affordable housing, to be managed by a very professional, well-proven organization. As I add up the numbers between CDBG funds and housing trust funds, we would be giving ORA $127,987 immediately. That leaves $63,486 in the housing trust fund, which is not peanuts. It's real money. But when it comes to making football fields into hospitals, that money will not come locally for us. That's emergency. That's FEMA money. Health departments have money from the feds to do this sort of project. We're not expected to fund that.
Right.
And we are going to need affordable housing desperately when this all ends. So I would support the recommendation that you had, Rich.
Is Chris there and others? You want to weigh in?
This is Linda, and I would like
to... Oh, Linda, yeah, hi.
Remember me? Hi. I have a question. If we were to adopt your recommendation, Rich, do we have the ability to call special meetings of this commission to make decisions between now and next month, if that's called for? So make ourselves available to Kelly if there's an emergency, but we want to retain control of the balance of the trust fund?
Well, that was going to be my second recommendation, that we be willing to meet again, not just monthly, to look at the emerging situation and emerging plans that could help the city address those. And so it doesn't leave it up to the city administrator to just decide that one program needs emergency funding, but rather has a bit of more of a thoughtful planning process in it. I mean, we're always recommenders, but it would, I think, help sort out the crisis thinking and get it more into a planning thinking.
I'd like to say that in the past, we can make recommendations, but ultimately it's the city council's decision about whether to accept our recommendations or not.
Right.
So how this is presented is really important. And I think we should go ahead and make our recommendation. We don't necessarily get to allocate it, but hopefully the city council will move quickly on this so that Aura can get additional funds.
That sounds good to me.
Others?
Agreed.
I agree.
This is Ethel. I agree.
We may be ready to vote, Rich.
Okay, yes. So, Linda and Brandon, if we formulate a motion that says that we recommend funding immediately for OLA with flexibility to direct those funds in a way that matches the emerging needs, and we recommend that we fund the Umpqua, their proposal. And is there another part?
Just those two.
Right. And that along with that, we stand ready as a commission to meet periodically during the month to help address emergent plans as they come forward. That would be a motion. Our staff there?
Yes. It seems that if that motion was made, seconded, and approved by the commission, we'd forward that recommendation to the city council for their consideration. And we'll also provide it to Kelly so she knows that this commission is available to have intermittent meetings as a resource for how emergency funds are allocated under her authority per the emergency declaration by council.
Yes,
can I second that motion, Rich?
Was that Jackie? Oh,
that was
Echo. No, that is Echo.
Need a second?
Echo, and we need a second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay. So So all in favor of the that set of recommendations, we're going to need to do this again by a roll call vote. So Linda, you're not going to respond, but can we have everyone else take a vote? Does somebody have the list?
I can do this. Or Heidi, do you want to?
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
Heidi Parker?
Yes.
Aaron Crawley?
Yes.
Chris Mahan?
Yes.
Jackie Bachman?
Yes.
Linda Rupon? Or were you abstaining still?
Abstaining again.
Echo Fields?
Yes.
Tom Gunderson?
Yes.
Gina Duquesne?
Yes.
And Rich Rohde?
Yes. Well, thank you all. That was
Rich,
a long
go,
odyssey. Echo.
I have a request for staff, I think, for staff to keep the commission regularly informed about any applications that the city makes for additional money, emergency funding from the Community Service Block Grant, from Community Development Block Grant, from the Emergency Solutions Grants, and any other of the other provisions under the whatever that new piece of legislation is called. I think it's called CARES or something like that from the feds. That they keep us, that staff or the council keep us in the loop about any applications we're making for that emergency funding.
Good idea.
Yeah, I'd like to know that as soon as it happens.
Good idea.
I'm happy to keep you updated on anything that our department does. I'm not always aware of what happens in other departments, but if I become aware of those things, I will certainly keep you updated on those.
Thanks, Linda.
So before you all go, this is Diane DeRee speaking again. I just wanted to say thank you so much on behalf of Aura for your continued support of our winter shelter. That is phenomenal for us, and for also this vote of confidence, really, by giving us some flexibility on how we spend those funds that hopefully will be accepted by the council. And our commitment back to you that we will keep you informed if we get these funds of how we're doing on spending the money and the kind of results that we're delivering. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
Great.
The next thing on the agenda we have to do is a consolidated plan recommendation. Linda?
Yes. So you already reviewed the draft consolidated plan at your last meeting. Jackie made one correction at that meeting, which has been made and is in the draft that you have in your packet. But since then, Jackie also made another suggestion, which I have since corrected, which was on page 65, and it was a glaring omission of Aura from the service providers listed. So I did add Aura as a service provider and put a brief description, and I will email that out to you just on its own so you don't have to look through the whole document. And we would just ask at this time that you approve make a recommendation to the council regarding acceptance of this document.
I move to approve the consolidated plan recommendation.
Could we wait just a moment?
Sure.
Were you, Linda, were you asking us to add Connie Saldana's suggestions, that options that could be implemented at a local level, strategies to promote lifelong accessible housing?
Thank you for reminding me, Heidi. You are welcome to make that recommendation. So that is the comment that we received via email regarding something that she did not see in the consolidated plan, and she wanted to make sure that we were aware.
I think those are excellent recommendations. They seem pretty standard. A lot of communities have added those, and I think we clearly would support that given the age of our community.
I agree. Well, I'm happy to amend the motion to include the menu of potential strategies to promote lifelong accessible housing.
Perfect. So is there a second to that?
Chris,
yes, seconded. I second.
Did we get who that was?
It was two people.
Yeah, I need a single person to second.
I second it. Chris.
Okay, I'm going to put Chris Mahan down as a second.
Chris, all right. Yay. First thing in there, man.
Hey, Chris.
Cool.
Go, Chris.
Cool. Okay, all those, we don't need to do this one, I don't think, by a roll call. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Any opposed? Any abstentions? It looks like it's covered and it's been passed. So as we're getting ready to wind up, do we need to think about the April agenda and or how do we, if we're called upon to have a meeting between now and April, how would that happen?
Call me.
A doodle? Do a doodle, you know, a doodle thing, doodle poll?
Okay. So, Linda, can you just, I guess, just get us ready for the April meeting, and then if there arises a potential for us to be involved in some of needed programmatical work, that you would email us, and then we could try to do another Zoom call.
Sure. At this time, I don't know, just because all of our meetings have been put on hold, this was a necessary meeting because of the CDBG requirements.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
right.
Sorry.
Oh, hi, Gina.
Will hey, you. I'm sorry, I disconnected myself, so I just got on really quick.
Bye. So I can keep you posted as to whether there's an emergent need, and in that case, then I would send out an email, and we could look at arranging something like this again, which, of course, we have somewhat limited use, Brandon, or maybe not as easy access.
No, we have the ability to schedule Zoom meetings as needed for those meetings that are approved as necessary.
Required.
All commission meetings have otherwise been suspended at this time.
Okay.
Could I remind commissioners that public meeting laws don't allow you to reply all when you get something from Linda or Brandon? You need to just respond to the sender, not to the whole commission, because that violates public meeting laws.
Right.
Good reminder.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, on this kind of ending note then, and Brandon will officially, as the host, end us, but I would just say that even so, my technology problems here were difficult. Seeing your faces is really wonderful. I love you all. The work that people put in, the struggle is really worth it. Thank you. And so, Brandon, you're our host. Do you want to officially
pull
end
the plug.
Our meeting?
Yeah, there's a button at the bottom of my screen that says end meeting. So I'll go ahead and do that. And thank you guys all for joining.
Everyone. Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
Stay well.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.